Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Melinda Guyal, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Great. How are you today?
Very fine. Very fine. We're having a large retreat and a smaller retreat within the large retreat, and it's just being quite fabulous.
Sounds wonderful. I was just going to ask you about that. If I, you know, when I look at the calendar, I see a lot of events in August at the monastery.
Yes, yeah, and it's just all different layers and levels of training for all of us, and looking at just, you know, having new exercises and a really fine practice time.
Wonderful, wonderful. It sounds great. And I imagine beautiful weather on top of all that.
It is beautiful weather. It's on the warm side, but even that is beautiful.
Great. Great. Melinda, I understand you're going to talk to us today about peace storming.
Yes, we wanted to. We have another peace storming coming up. It will be our second, the first one having been in Los Angeles last December.
Uh-huh.
And the next one will be just before the bridge walk. And it's going to be combined. I've been thinking it as sort of a real Sangha blowout week because we have so many possibilities for Sangha participation.
Yes.
And I think if someone were to participate in the walk before and the peace storming project and the bridge walk, it's just wow.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, life-changing.
Wow. So for people who have no idea what you're talking about, can you give a little background on what peace storming is and how it relates to practice and all that?
Well, peace storming, I can certainly give you my sense of it. Peace storming is something that occurred, I think it was Tesheri who had the original notion. It's sort of like barnstorming, only peace storming, where we as a community travel to an area that we learn can use some extra hands, that has some project or projects that they're not being able to sort of do on their own, but
yes,
projects that would be really helpful to those communities.
Yes.
And so we gather, and more folks in the Sangha gather, and we go to that place, and it's kind of like we pick up speed as we go in the sense of a storm. We pick up energy and more hands and then work on with the community that we're visiting, work on the projects that they have identified as ones that would be really helpful to have some help with.
Uh-huh.
And it is it's so incredibly rewarding. It's kind of win, 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 win.
Yes.
Because the community clearly benefits. We, the people in Sangha who participate, clearly benefit.
Uh-huh.
And in coming together in that way, there's a sense also that we bring a heightened sense of community to the community, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh. Bringing a heightened sense of community to the community.
Yeah. That what I was aware of in the Los Angeles peace storming was how the people who lived at Beyond Shelter at Broadway Village, where we did our peace storming last year,
yes,
came and participated with us and interacted with one another in a way that they never had.
Uh-huh.
And with the presence of the monks and the people of Sangha who came to participate.
Yes.
Like something really magical happened.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard exactly to articulate it, but it's something really magical happens and people feel good about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Feel good about one another.
Yes.
And then have something lasting after,
yes,
the peace storming event.
Yes.
Both sort of tangible in Los Angeles, it was garden beds and library shelves.
Right.
So tangible and that kind of not so tangible but really felt sense of extra strong community.
So there's the monks there, there's Sangha who come to participate, mm-hmm. and then there in Los Angeles, the community of residents who live at Broadway Village.
Yeah, and it was everybody from 4 or 5 year old Jose up to, I don't know how old the person was who, you know, was helping plant the tomatoes, and just a great spectrum of people, and all just having one heck of a good time.
That sounds really wonderful.
Yeah.
And what's planned for Palo Alto?
Well, in October, end of September, early October, before the bridge walk, we have been talking to a group called the Ecumenical Hunger Program. And they are in East Palo Alto. And for folks who don't know the Bay Area, Palo Alto is, of course, where Stanford University is, and it's a pretty upscale community. And just on the other side of Highway 101 is East Palo Alto, which is a pretty downscale community. And, you know, the I can't quote any numbers in terms of the poverty levels or the number of single-parent homes or, you know, addictions and a variety of ills that so often move in to poor neighborhoods.
Yes.
And the Ecumenical Hunger Program is actually something we've been participating with for many years. I think our participation first started with adopting families at Christmas.
Yes.
And the program goes around to families asking what the what everybody in the family would like to have for Christmas, relays those lists to the people who have volunteered to participate, and that way the families actually get to have some kind of Christmas.
Yes.
We've been doing that for a long time. I would say at least probably 20 years, something like that.
Wow. Wow.
And so the Ecumenical Hunger Program has a facility in East Palo Alto, and one of the things they do is sort of accept donations of, well, any kinds of donations, but including clothes and furniture and and even food. And then people from the community come to their main buildings and find clothes that work for them, find furniture that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Yes.
One of the projects that we're looking at, I think we're not completely set yet on exactly what's going to happen during this peace storming in terms of the projects themselves. But one of the ones we hope to do is refurbishing the main room where people come to sort through donations, who come to look for furniture or clothing.
I see.
And, you know, fix the walls and paint it and make it really inviting.
Yes. Yes. Exciting.
Yeah.
So they have a main room where people come to look at what's been donated, clothes and other items. And one potential project is to help organize and renovate that room and paint it.
Yeah. Yeah. Something we really appreciated. A couple of us visited there last month, I think it was, is that the Ecumenical Hunger Program people really have an eye to making things feel good, feel, you know, be attractive.
Yes.
So that when their community comes in to sort through clothes or to look for furniture, they don't feel like they're coming into a warehouse or a dump or a, so they've planted lawns and are painting and really making an effort to make the facilities feel like a place people would want to go and kind of feel respected,
yes,
cared for.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what was just coming to mind as you were talking. All of that, making it more attractive, can give people a sense that they are respected and valued.
Very much so. Very much so. And it was so neat that, that it was clear that that was a priority for the people in at the Ecumenical Hunger Program.
Yes.
And other projects that we may be working on are our individual homes, where, for instance, there's a mom with five kids who's a working mom and has no time or money left over to clean the carpets or to fix a broken window or to, you know, do things, again, that would allow them to live in a home that is cared for in that way.
Yes.
And that's another one of the things that that may that we may be able to get to during this very exciting peace storming.
Wonderful. You know, as you've been talking, what's coming up for me is just a bigger and bigger sense of we the Sangha, we the monks, we this other community, and just really without limits.
That is such a nice way to put it, and it's so, I'm hoping that lots of folks will take advantage of this, because it's really something that, that, you know, I didn't have a sense before I went to Los Angeles of how personally transforming the experience would be, because
yes.
you can't really catch it in words.
Yes.
It's something that happens in the, I can say, energy of the event and all of the people who participate and how we are with one another. And it's that we, Michael, very much so, the we of the people at Broadway Village. And I'm really anticipating that it will be the we of the folks in East Palo Alto who participate with the Sangha that that come along for this.
So in other words, you just have to come and have the experience.
You got to see it. You got to be there. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really hope people will for themselves.
Yes.
Really, yeah, yeah. It's an extraordinary practice opportunity. And again, we have the other things that are within it, the walk and, of course, the 7th annual bridge walk, which will be bigger than ever and more people there than ever. And, yeah, yeah. It's interesting to see how big the heart can get to take in everything that's available.
Yes, yes. Very exciting. Melinda, thanks for joining us today. That was really inspiring.
My pleasure. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I love that, seeing how big the heart can get to take in everything that's available.
Yes.
That's a nice image.
It is a nice image.
Oh,
it is a nice,
experience.
Yes, yes. And to me, it really points at conditioning trying to limit us from having that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't go do something like that. You know, it's just, it's too much time. It's too much money. I don't really know how to do anything. I, you know, I'm not that strong. And then we go and we find out that it's glorious, which was why we were being talked out of doing it in the first place.
Yes, yes, yes. Wonderful. Jared, let me get out the phone number here. Toll-free in North America, 888 for Sangha. And in numbers, that's 888-472-6442. And that'll get you to TalkShoe, and then you'll want to enter the call ID, which is 15406#. And we'd love to hear from people today. Sherry, we have two callers on the line here.
All right.
Okay, the first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Nicole from Oakland.
Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm absolutely great, and I'm calling in for a practice assignment.
Good. What do you have in mind?
I don't know. So I am now in a very different life than the last time when I came to the monastery for the month retreat. I've had a baby, and
uh-huh.
he is 11 weeks old today, which is just totally amazing and wonderful, and I'm very, very blessed. And I feel very motivated to be here now. So I have long days where I'm home with him, and if conditioning would have its way, I'd be in my head, you know, most of the time. So I try my very best to stay with sensation and stay grounded in the present moment. But I thought, well, I should call Sherry and see if she has some assignment or something I should do that would help.
Well, I don't have anything you should be doing because, you know. But when you were talking, it occurred to me that it might be fun when you the two of you are together and there is quite a bit of just hanging out time when they're that age. Yeah?
Yeah.
And so just to practice breathing together.
I'm imagining, as you said that, I'm imagining looking at him and knowing that he, I mean, of course, I know he's breathing, but I guess I'd look at his little tummy rising and falling.
Yes.
And then, of course, feel my own breathing.
That's right.
It's hard to do all the things I used to do, like sitting for 30 minutes.
Yes.
Either I'm up all night or I am up almost every 2 hours in the evening, you know, at nighttime. So I try to fit in the 15-minute meditation, and I can fit in that twice a day without too much trouble, though sometimes I fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little different than it used to be. But
well, and the it used to be that it would be reasonable for you to plan a particular length of time to sit. Now you get to grab meditations wherever you can.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting contrast because I can meditate. I'm not busy in the world so much, so there's so much silent time. Although conditioning will come in and try to say something like, you should be talking to the baby, you should be filling up the space. And I think that, yeah, my sense is just being with him and really attending to him.
Yes.
You know, not getting in the story is
yes.
the gift.
Yeah, that's why I suggested the one about breathing together, because you really have to stay present and focused to breathe with someone else.
So do you mean match his breath, or you just mean
yeah.
notice his breath?
Okay, yeah, match it.
Okay.
Yeah, take a breath in when he breathes in, take a breath out when he breathes out.
Oh, that's a neat assignment. I'm glad that we kept talking because I didn't know that's what you meant. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Cool. That sounds good.
Yeah.
I've also written to the monastery about doing the peace storming or doing the bridge walk, and I don't know. I mean, I'm a new mom, so I don't really know what's possible with a small person. But those things might be things I can also.
Well, I would think the bridge walk would be absolutely manageable. I don't know about the peace storming.
Okay, but the bridge walk.
Absolutely.
Putting
him in his little outfit and away y'all go.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. I've been trying to call in for about 3 weeks, so I'm feeling really, really happy that I actually did it.
Good. And let us know how that goes. Because I've never encouraged anybody to do that with a baby before, so I'm really curious to see what happens.
Okay, great. Thank
Good.
You so much.
Take
Have
care.
Have a wonderful day. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Nicole. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have our next caller.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Maria. I'm calling from Ellensburg, Washington.
Well, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm calling. Well, I'm great.
Good.
And I'm calling for something that's been on my mind. I'm going to attend the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat. It starts this Saturday.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and what's been really fascinating for me is watching my mind, my conditioned mind, as I get closer and closer to this event.
Uh-huh. What's it doing? What's it up to?
Well, I get this sense of grasping for things to be nervous about.
Uh-huh.
And grasping for big ideas about what's going to happen to me and how I'm going to transform, and how this feeling of wanting this to be an answer to lots of problems.
Uh-huh. So you're just going along in your life, and then
right
here it comes. Something is going to be a problem, something you should be nervous or anxious about, or
right.
This is it. You're going to get through
this right.
week, and then you're in clear sailing.
Yeah. So that somehow when I return from this, I'll have all the answers.
Uh-huh.
And,
technically is true.
Is it?
Sure. You'll have all the answers, but you probably have all the answers already. The trick is,
well, I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah, the trick is practicing what we know, not getting more, you know, it's not so much that we need more information, it's that we need to take advantage of what we already have. But hopefully it'll be put
right.
together in an attractive way for you.
What's really been fascinating is realizing that there's a part of me that wants to be nervous, or that thinks
mm-hmm.
I should be nervous and anxious.
Mm-hmm. And,
so
when you're nervous and anxious, what's the result?
Well, it's kind of like I start into a pattern of, I choose a thing that I'm nervous about. So I'm nervous about what I'm going to wear, or am I going to have this right thing that I need to bring, or how is it going to be type of
uh-huh.
things. And I'll pick one detail in there. And then I do remember. I'll get caught up in it a little bit, and then I'll remember, well, how about I just worry about that when I'm there and it's happening?
Uh-huh.
Am I prepared? Yes, I'm prepared to go. So, you know, let's just deal with it when we get there. That's what I've been trying to come back to. And it's just this, it's like I go on these little trips and then I come back and then I found that I'm gone again and then I come back.
And so,
and it's been a fascinating process.
Yes, it is. And when you go on those little trips, you're not where you are.
Right.
Yeah. And then
yeah.
you remind yourself. You remind yourself that you're not in that situation. You're not having that problem right now. And that brings you back to where you are.
Yeah. I'll realize all of a sudden, oh, I'm still in my room, or I'm walking down the street, or I'm doing whatever I'm doing right now, and that's fine. It's okay for me to come back here and be here when I'm, you know, when I'm in a new here, then I can do that.
Uh-huh.
But what's really just been interesting, go ahead.
Well, what you're noticing is that conditioning is constantly trying to pull you out of where you are and into some other place. That's the constant. Whether you're worrying about something or you're fantasizing about how perfect your life is going to be laid, all of these things, that what they have in common is you're not where you are, doing what you're doing, being present.
Right. And I want, there's a part of me that wants to do everything right when I get there.
Uh-huh.
So that part of me is really wants to prepare and really wants to have every detail all mapped out.
Hmm.
And so that's where I get this, I need to be nervous thing.
Yeah. And it's a big assignment, isn't it? It's very tricky to be perfectly prepared for a situation that is in the future. The
yeah.
only way you could actually be perfectly prepared is if you prepared afterwards.
Right.
Because that's
wouldn't
the only
that make
way
everything simpler.
Yeah, that's the only way. I've never thought about that. I think I'm gonna take that up. I will look at what I'm gonna take and what I'll need and what I'm gonna do after the event, because then I'll be pretty
yeah.
sure that I'm right about that. But ahead
yeah.
of time,
you
can't know.
It really sends conditioning in a whirlwind when I'm trying to prepare for something that I'm not really sure what it's going to be like. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know how I'm going to feel. I don't know what we're going to do. On one hand, it's very exciting, I think. But on the other hand, those parts of me that want to do it right are really pretty frantic.
Yeah, and so what does seem to work? Because you can't know what's going to happen, so you can just give that up.
No.
I mean, you can check the weather, and you can read what they send you. Beyond that,
right?
Who knows? So there's really that's it in terms of doing. So what's your other alternative? Which you actually already mentioned.
Well, I just keep coming back to the breath. I just that's my tool. That's my standby.
Yeah. And the knowledge that when you are in that moment, you will do whatever you can do in that moment.
Yeah. And I also have been reminding myself, from a mentor kind of place, that no one who's going to be there is expecting me to show up and fit some certain standard.
That is exactly true. And the thing about it is, even if there were that kind of standard being set by a Zen monastery, it would not
right.
have anything to do with the one being set by your conditioning.
Ah, that's true.
Isn't that good? That's good to keep in mind, huh?
Yeah,
because
good.
Your conditioning is talking to you about how you should be the perfect conditioned person.
Right.
What the monastery wants you to have is absolute compassion for yourself just as you are.
Oh, that's really wonderful. That's a gift before I even get there, just to know that.
Yeah. And if you think about it, isn't that what you also want for, let's just start with, anybody you love?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's what we all know we want for loved ones. We don't really care if they meet some sort of conditioned standard about what a perfect person is. What we want for them is that they feel loved and that they they are kind to themselves and that they know what a special person they are and what they contribute to our lives and how important they are and what a gift they are. Not again, when they're meeting some conditioned standard of perfection, but when they are lovingly who they are.
Yeah, I'm going to work on sharing that with myself and everyone else too, but gosh, it makes it so much easier when I start with myself.
Oh.
It took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah, it's really the only place we can make anything happen.
Yeah.
Because as we've noticed, we can love other people, just bring ourselves out loving them, but if they're not receptive to it, it's just not going anywhere. But bringing that compassion to you, that's something, you, because you are the giver and the receiver, there's much, you have a much better chance of it actually landing.
Yeah, and it's, what's nice is how instantaneous it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's fleeting, when I can find that compassion,
mm-hmm.
it's right there.
Yes.
In the moment. There's no waiting for something to change. It's just right there, you know, like a gust of wind or
yes.
something.
And everything is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're getting the place
really,
ready
I'm
for
really...
you. You're gonna do a little shopping, plan some meals, stuff like that. So we're doing our part. So you remember what your part is.
Okay.
Pack the compassion.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Well, thanks. I just wanted to bring that up and look at it.
Good. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us tonight. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my mind. What a life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, let me give out the phone number again. Toll-free in North America, 888-472-6442. That'll get you to TalkShoe. And then when you're there, enter the call ID, which is 15406#, and we'd love to talk with you today. Sherry, I have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington.
Hey, Greta.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
It's been a while since I called, and I received your email today, and it was pointing at something that I've been looking at having to do with something wrong, not enough, and projection.
Uh-huh.
So, this is part of the constant conversation relating to my partner. and it's always so you know, I know that it's a projection, and I just so much believe that, you know, there's something wrong with how he does this, that, or the other thing, or he doesn't do, you know, we're not relating in a certain way, and we don't have enough this, or, and it just goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And so part of me understands that I should not have that conversation, and yet part of me believes totally that it's true, that I'm not getting what I really need or want out of this relationship.
And do you know who that is?
You know, I don't, I'm not sure. I mean, I know there's, I guess that's probably a really good question to look at. I know there's a part of me that, you know, in my sort of formative years, my closest male relationship with my grandfather.
Uh-huh.
And there are a lot of traits, so in the world of content, there are a lot of traits of being really capable and good with his hands and, you know, can fix anything, in that my husband is very much like my grandfather. And when he's like that, and when we're working on a project together, I feel really good and really close to him. That part of me just feels like everything is just right.
Uh-huh.
And then when that's not happening, then I can list all the things that are wrong and that are not, you know, how it's not like that, or it's not like my knight in shining armor, or, you know. And I think I understand that there is somebody in me who needs me to take care of her. But maybe I just am not really asking the right question of who that is.
It feels important, doesn't it?
Well, it seems like it didn't occur to me to ask who that was.
Mm-hmm. And to do the standard thing that we do with the five processes, who is she, first of all, and her unhappiness can give you clues about who she is, you know, could be an opening for getting to know her. So as you get to know her, what are her beliefs and assumptions about life? What is it? Not just a relationship, but about life. I mean, what does she believe about who she needs to be and should be, and then what will be provided? What a partner's job is, and what all of that means. And so following the projections, as you say, perhaps somebody who needs to be taken care of by you, but what does she, again, the clues, because what she projects that he doesn't provide, we can guess she's not providing either.
Right, right.
Or we could say, you're not providing. Somewhere she's not getting those things that she sees him not delivering.
Yeah, I guess that's the part that I'm sort of intellectualizing. Like, maybe I'm afraid to really dig into it. Because I just hear this conversation that says, well, I know it's a projection, and I know if I'm putting that out there, then there's something I'm not doing. But that's as far as I'm taking it. Like, I'm not.
That's right. And so it's not really diagramming those sentences. It's not, okay.
Right.
Because we can always be suspicious when a sentence starts off, I know this is a projection, but the person actually doesn't. What they know is you're supposed to own a projection, and so that substitutes for owning the projection.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, okay. Rather than what you know, what we're aiming to do with that, which is we have no idea what's going on with him.
Right.
None. But the person projecting this is having this experience.
Right.
So if I feel like he's not giving me enough affection, he's not giving me enough attention. Well, in his world, it could be he's so over the top with this affection attention thing that, you know, he can't believe he's pulling this off. And so I'm over here with my issues in and for myself about affection, about attention.
So it seems like I'm kind of in this pattern of the intellectualizing, and I'm just wondering what techniques would be appropriate for not going down that road and just really starting to dig into this and see who's there and what's going on.
Yeah, so I like threes. Three is such a good number. So job one is to find out who she is, right? Because in what her story is. You know, there's such interesting things about this because, you know, when an aspect of the personality gets fixated on something like this, one of the things that it's easy for us to lose sight of is what you actually started out talking about, that there are parts of you who really love and appreciate this man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And what we don't think of is, okay, I'll make up my own version of this. You know, I love the fact that he's good with his hands and he can fix anything and he can do anything and he's super handy and, you know, I feel really safe and cared for because I know the house is not going to fall down around my ears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have this other person who wants romance. I want to be whisked off to the airport for a weekend in Paris. I can get fixated on that. It's on that personality and that story. And I can lose sight of the fact that if suddenly, so maybe I get rid of, Mr. Handy Guy over here, and I find this romantic jet setter. And there we are going around the world doing all of these fabulous, fabulous things. And the person who was in the relationship with the home guy is now as unhappy and unfulfilled as the other one was before.
Right, right. I've seen that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just trade off.
Right.
If I'm trying to solve the problems of a partial person. So, which of course is why we get to know all of the aspects of the personality and work to meet their needs rather than letting a partial personality take over a whole body and a whole life.
Right.
So that remains job one. But then in threes, what are the top three unmet needs?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe you know that off the top of your head. Maybe you would have to look at that. But look at what the top three unmet needs are, the top three complaints, dissatisfactions. And then set about making a plan for taking care of those needs. And there's that Native American thing where I'm sure it's some tribe, but I don't know which one, where a person can only complain about something three times, and then they have to either have movement on that issue or they don't get to talk about it anymore.
Right, right. I've done that with myself.
Yeah. So until these issues are addressed.
Right.
Nobody gets to go down that rant.
Right.
So that conversation is just put on hold while all of the energy goes into this experiment.
Right. Right.
Okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you'll let us know what happened, and we'll go from there.
So that's the third thing, is actually taking the action then?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you pick out the three complaints. You know, you just listen to her talk about,
right,
and decide which ones you want to address. And then she doesn't get to say anything, because the energy that goes into complaining about him is now going to go into figuring out how to address these issues directly.
You know, I think this is such a, this whole process is, as you were pointing out, something that we do with so many things. You know, it feels like it would be a huge step just to tackle one thing and say that I wasn't going to be dissatisfied anymore.
Yes.
That process of dissatisfaction is so strong and compelling that if you could break the cycle, I mean, it seems like if you could start to break the cycle in one area, then you have a new tool for really seeing through the process of
absolutely. And what you're looking at is just so big and so important, because dissatisfaction being the process of conditioning, okay, that's how it keeps itself in existence, is through dissatisfaction.
Right.
And of course the content is endless.
Yes.
So whatever is heard, whatever is seen, felt, tasted, touched, remembered, imagined, fantasized, can be a source of dissatisfaction. And it just takes a person's attention and moves it from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. And the only constant is dissatisfaction and ego maintenance.
Oh, absolutely. That's my experience.
Yeah. So that's big and excellent.
Well, I'm excited, because this practice opportunity is just, the things that you pointed out in the email, you know, it'd been a while since I responded to the last one, and I was like, oh, I'm not really sure what I said. And then as I was reading your three categories, it was like, oh, yeah, that was what I said.
Yeah, that one's mine.
I keyed into the lose-lose, but then a little while later when I was looking at something wrong, not enough, I said, this is what's going on when I'm complaining about my husband all the time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so that was one of the reasons I called, is I just really wanted to check that out. And, you know, I knew that there was something there, but it was, you know, you get so caught up in the whole process of trying to fix it and, you know, maybe if you do this differently. And it's really that whole conversation that's got you caught up in knots and not having anything to do with anything.
Which is another good point, because getting a human caught in that conversation is what conditioning is about all the time. And conditioning actually doesn't care what the conversation is, as long as the attention is on it.
Yeah, and that, you know, in a way that's a relief, but in a way it's so disheartening, because conditioning's conversation is really, you know, there's no fun there. There's no pleasure there. I mean,
that's right.
Have something constantly telling you how everything is wrong.
Yeah.
And as we're talking about this and you initiated the discussion a month or so ago, it's kind of, in a way, it's sort of frightening that it is so much like that all the time, but then it's really consistent, so that's good.
Yes. It's not like there are 1,000 things that we have to fix. There's only one thing going on.
Yeah. And I'm starting to really catch that part. So I appreciate it, and I will let you know.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I'm always so inspired by people calling in and their courage that I project on.
People working hard.
People working hard.
Yeah. Conditioning is out there just quaking in its little boots.
Yes.
Because there's a movement going on.
Yes.
We're closing in on it.
Yes. Very excited. Jerry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Michael,
Sherry?
I wonder if there are other people out there who want to make wonderful music for us.
Oh,
I think
wow.
There are other sponsors out there who could add to our musical fun.
Oh.
I love our ads, don't you?
Yes, I love our ads, and I think the primary reason I love them, besides the fact that they're such beautiful music, if they're really supportive of practice.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So if someone out there listening is interested in becoming a sponsor, they can send an email to openair@livingcompassion.org. And we'll start the conversation from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea. Jerry, we have another caller.
Right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
This is Grigsby.
Hey,
can you
Grigsby?
Hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, it's been about a year and a half since I called in.
Yes,
and
because you have been far away.
That's right, and I'm still far away. I'm calling you from China.
Wow.
So let's hope the connection stays firm.
Yes.
My conditioning wanted a pretty elaborate reason to call in, and I realized who was making such a demand. Really, what I need is a greater feeling of support in my practice and a feeling that I can be part of the movement that you spoke about a few minutes ago against conditioning.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, can I give you a little background?
Please.
Okay. I had been doing practice probably a year and a half before I felt strong enough to take a step and do something that felt really meaningful and exciting in my life. And that's how I ended up teaching English in China. And so the beginning of that, there was a huge amount of resistance from conditioning, but I was able to hold on and get through it. And then I found a lot of reward because my life had changed completely and I felt really engaged in doing something that felt meaningful and that kept me busy.
Uh-huh.
So I've reached a place, however, now it's summer vacation, and I'm looking at continuing to stay here, where conditioning, not surprisingly, has come back in full strength, it
yes.
feels like.
Yes.
So
I mean, we sort of could have anticipated that, huh?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, yeah, it might get kind of thrown off by the newness and strangeness, and you know, but sooner or later it's going to get its footing and it's going to come back at you.
Well, it's certainly done that. I really, really appreciate some of the resources you're providing, such as reflective listening and the archives, because that's kind of held me to the degree of practice I'm able to make.
Mm-hmm.
At least it feels very largely that way. But there are a lot of voices that are going on that are really very strong here, and I suppose they center on the fact that I don't have what conditioning would consider security. Which means some different things: financial security, the security of a close relationship, having a home somewhere. And so those are pretty strong voices at times.
Now,
let me
ask you this. So for the first period of time that you were over there, so I'm guessing, I'm projecting, that when you left, those concerns were not as compelling as this adventure.
Absolutely.
And then as the adventure has kind of turned into normal life,
right,
then the dissatisfaction comes in. Then there's a focus on what I don't have or what I don't have enough of.
Yeah, that's it. That's very much the way it's been. So my struggle, I guess you could say, or my relationship with conditioning is though I'm in an exotic situation, and I have really found something meaningful in my life as work, my relationship with conditioning is not much different than it was before.
Correct. Yeah. And it actually wouldn't be. We all fall for the illusion that something is going to change it. You know, the most basic one that people fall for is, if I can just become the right person, then I'll be okay. And, of course,
right,
what people don't get is, those don't have anything to do with each other. People are being tortured by conditioning, by self-hatred, because that's what makes conditioning, self-hatred, the center of the universe. It has nothing to do with the circumstances of a person's life. But it takes a long time for us, first of all, to begin to catch on to it, and then to accept that that's the case. Yeah?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So what it says now, I'm projecting, is, yeah, but if you had enough money and if you had a relationship, a good relationship, that would actually probably be enough, then we would leave you alone. Okay? We're only torturing you because of these things.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, of course, that that's not true, because they tortured you when you lived here and you made this change in your life. And, of course, the idea behind that was, and that change would make a difference. So they would torture you less, which they did
yeah,
for a little while.
Yeah, this is quite true. No, I'm very clear on what you're saying. I think part of the difficulty I'm having is making a separation between these, let's call them conditioned voices about things that I need, versus the concept of whether they're some authentic needs of the self, such as for intimacy, for example.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well,
I'm just making
the thing about it is, you know, first of all, that's an interesting discussion, the authentic needs. But with something like that, there is actually technically very little you can do about it.
The voices say I could change my situation or take a certain kind of action.
Right. But if you're talking about having a close, loving relationship, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm sure you could find temporary companionship. But what you're looking for is a close, loving relationship. And that's hard to orchestrate.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to the right places and you can meet people and you can, you know, you can make yourself available for this sort of thing, but you really don't have control over it.
That's
unless
true.
You're going to get terribly kind of spiritual about the whole thing and say, well, I'm just going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, and the fourth person my index finger points at, that's the person I'm going to be in a close, loving relationship with, and I'm just going to use this as an opportunity to find out how, you know. But I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No, well, I think what you're pointing at is the importance of the relationship with the self.
Yeah.
And being able to give that to oneself, and then the outer world often reflects.
Yes, and the thing about it is, what keeps a person from having that kind of relationship with themselves, and actually technically with anybody else too, is that a person tends to be intimately involved in that conversation with conditioning about what's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's surely been where I have been to a good degree.
Yeah. So you know what I'm going to suggest.
Well, go ahead and do it anyway.
Nix the voices.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I know that, you know, that's a tall order, and I don't expect that you're going to pull that off by next week. But the thing that you can start practicing immediately is not believing it.
Yeah.
And there are some ways that we can go about that. You could decide what you want to do. You could say, all right, you know, I'm going to do this for another year. And then I'm going to turn my attention to setting myself up so that I'll have a certain financial security for the rest of my life. If that's what you know, look and see what it is that you want to do. Otherwise, it's a lot like the situation that we were talking about in the relationship, where you could leave those circumstances that you're in now, follow a subpersonality who wants to focus on financial security, and be even very successful with financial security, and the person who wanted to go to China and do this work is going to be devastated.
Yeah. Well, that describes what mistakes I've made in the past, which was to allow a particular subpersonality to sort of run things, and then the other ones would get squeezed out and then start making demands.
Yes.
So nothing really went anywhere.
Yes.
Consistently.
Yes. And so what you're practicing now is moving into center, out of the conversation, out of the voices haranguing you all the time. And coming back to center and getting to know all of these parts of yourself. Who wants this? Who's concerned about this? Who's worried about this? How could we? And putting some concentrated effort into what's a voice of conditioning that truly is just torturing you, and what is a legitimate need or concern of an aspect of the personality, and how might you work with that personality to address that concern and meet that need?
Right. Yeah. Well, I follow you completely.
Good.
And I see the importance of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's much not only is it much more likely to lead you where you want to be, but the process itself becomes interesting, exciting, fulfilling. So instead of going through the day with this, being beaten over the head with what's wrong and what you should do different and how you should be different and all of that sort of thing, you're working on an inclusive, supportive, loving, kind relationship with all these different aspects of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing is a more pleasant way to live.
For sure, yeah. Well, I've started seeing the usefulness of doing some scheduling.
Yes.
And trying to follow a schedule rather than letting whatever is going on in my head kind of pull me along.
Yes, because we know what that's going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to start to look at the managing or developing this process you've just described.
Yeah, and do some work with the aspects of the personality. Come up with, five key players right now in your life, or the 10 key players right now. Somebody wants to be in that place doing this work. Somebody is concerned about money. Somebody would like a close, loving relationship. Somebody would like, somebody really enjoys this. Somebody's interested in that. And just to step back and look at your life and get a sense of kind of who comes and goes through your day, and then spend some time really getting to know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. It's great to hear your voice.
Well, likewise, it's great to hear yours. I really miss the opportunity of coming to retreats and seeing you in person. But it's also great that I was able to find work that is meaningful.
Oh,
and
I work with some
really sweet young people.
And tell me this, Grigsby, what time of the day is it where you are?
It's 8 o'clock in the morning, or close now to 9 o'clock.
All right. Well, so you can call us once in a while. Not so bad.
Yeah, I want to. In the past, I had classes scheduled for radio time, but in the future, I hope maybe I'll have some time.
Good.
So I can call.
Well, we'll look forward to an update.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, and good morning.
Oh, and good evening to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Grigsby. Thanks for joining us, Grigsby. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, is that China retreat going to be on the schedule soon?
The China retreat?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be fun. Sherry, this show has been really useful to me tonight.
Good.
Very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, we're doing a not what but how retreat at the monastery right now. And
yes.
So it's just this show has felt like kind of a continuation of that retreat. Now, of course, I suspect that I'm always saying the same things anyway. But it just feels like this has gone right along with what we've been looking at. So it's been fun.
Wonderful. It has been fun. Let's do it again next week.
I'm there.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.